Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Hora de Boa Heights. First episode of 2021. Excited to be here with... Please introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. This is Marlene Aguilar.
Hey, how are you doing, Marlene?
I'm good. Thank you.
Jeez, this is what I was talking about. Because as I was setting things up, I've told Marlene that I've recorded with so much background noise in the back. And now there's like a military helicopter back there.
Just right when we started.
Yeah. Everything was nice and quiet up until then. But yeah, thank you again for making the time to be on the show, you know, doing the back and forth that we did to coordinate everything. Really appreciate you wanting to be on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I was surprised you hit me up. And so I'm like, sure, let's do it.
Why were you surprised?
Well, I wasn't expecting it. I don't know. I don't get hit up to do podcasts much, so.
All right. Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's a very common feeling with a lot of folks. They're like, okay. Oh, you want to talk to me on your show? It's like, yeah, you do amazing things. But yeah, I think more than anything, I just, because we haven't seen each other in a while, I think we both got a little similarity going in the hair.
Yeah.
Little salt and pepper club going.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
How have you been accepting the changes?
Oh, I've had my gray hair for a minute.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have a little mechon. And I mean, I like it. It's when I style it a certain way, it looks like a streak.
Yeah.
Kind of like Tigre del Norte. I forget his name.
But I think folks have that visual. You have like that little white streak going on.
Or some people have told me I look like Storm or some stuff like that. I'm like, all right, cool. Or like Rogue. I don't know, one of those.
Rogue, mostly Rogue. Yeah.
So I like it. It's something different.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting used to it a lot more. Obviously, you know, double standards with folks and how those kind of like hair changes, you know, alter how things look. But I mean, I've always gotten compliments on them. So I was like, oh, thank you. Being shy about it.
You're like, oh.
Yeah, I guess I'm growing my hair, right?
Right.
But then do folks kind of talk to you about it? It's like, oh, you must get really mad a lot.
Yes,
Really stressed.
Or my mom, well, yeah, it's the stress. My mom does tell me, she's like, ay, píntate el pelo, like dye your hair. Right. And I just tell her, like, no, I used to dye my hair a lot when I was younger, like in high school. I was obsessed with having like dark jet black hair. And, you know, I'm over it. It's just all that stuff is kind of bad for you.
A lot of chemicals.
Yeah, a lot of chemicals. So, I mean, it's just easier this way. And I think it looks good. So,
yeah, work it. Yeah, might as well.
Le digo a mi mamá, I tell her, like, oh, no, este es mi encanto. You don't know how many people tell me. Like, it's cute. Why am I going to get rid of that?
Yeah. No, I've been definitely growing more into it. But I think, you know, now, like, every time I take a shower or I get a haircut, I'm like, Jesus. Like, it's all underneath my hair. So when I do something and I can see it a lot more, obviously, than normal, I'm just like, God damn.
Yeah, well, los años no pasan en vano, right? Like,
no.
Time passes and we
see it. They don't do much with my hair. I'm wearing a hat right now. So, and, you know, in the last year, there's not much to have done to my hair. It's just like, make sure it's like at least presentable for the video call.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I wanted to have you on to talk about one of my favorite things to do, which is to eat.
Hey.
And one of the things that I think with a lot of other folks at the same time, you know, since the pandemic hit, is really reevaluating and, like, you know, really focusing on that connection that we have with our food, right? Because for me, in the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, ooh, I get to eat out all the time because I'm supporting local businesses, you know, doing my part to support the community. And then at one point, it's like, ugh, I'm tired. It's like, I just want to eat something different.
Tired of the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, as you know, as the many options that we have in the community, every other restaurant is still like a Mexican restaurant. Mm-hmm. And like, you can only eat so many different types of chilaquiles before you're like, I'm all out of that. So,
for sure.
I know you've been doing your meal service for a hot minute now. And even before that, you were doing it a couple of years ago. But before we get into all of that, let's get to know you a little bit, and please share with folks where did you grow up?
So I'm born and raised in East LA. So this is where you'd cue the Born in East LA song. Maybe you could do that.
I can. I will.
So yeah, born and raised in East LA. I'm first generation. My parents migrated from Michoacán, Mexico, in the late 70s. And, you know, we landed here in East LA. And I've been here since. I've moved a couple times, but it's mostly just within the area. And then I would say I was also raised in Mexico. Because my parents, they got lucky. They were able to get legalized through the 86 amnesty.
Yeah, right? And like a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm. And so my parents started taking us, well, my mom started taking us to Michoacán, back to her rancho, since I was 2 years old.
Nice.
And we would spend summers out there.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
Yeah. It was nice. It was definitely nice.
Did you, as you got older and, you know, y'all were taking those trips, did you notice that your responsibility started changing, or were you just always there, like, to have fun, enjoy it?
Like, in terms of what I had to do out there?
Yeah.
It was mostly my family wouldn't let us do much, really.
Oh.
So, just because, you know, we were guests.
Okay. Right? All right.
And then also they had this idea of that we were Americanized, so we didn't really know how to do stuff, or if we didn't, there wouldn't be any use to the skills or things that we would do out there for us out here in the States.
Interesting. Because my mom is from Michoacán, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
we're cousins.
And don't ask me where, though. Oh, okay. But before we came over to the United States, in the time we lived in Mexico City and coming over, we would go to her grandma's ranch. And it was, you know, for me, it was completely different because, one, I was a child. I was childhood age, so not a lot of responsibilities. A lot of fun. I was also a boy. So, you know, different standards. And for me, it's just like happy memories of like running around, you know, swimming in the rivers, going to milk a cow that was for some reason out in some like pasture that was really far away. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun stuff like that. And yeah, that to me was like such a fun time. But I know that it could always be different for everybody.
Yeah, no, it was pretty much fun times. You know, we would go to a rancho, very rural, and we were surrounded by forests or aguacate orchards, and it was great. I can't complain. And a lot of that really informed the kind of work that I do now and like the cooking that I do now. And so I'm glad I was able to have those experiences. You know,
those fresh cooked meals, handmade tortillas,
like cook nixtamal every day, get up and grind it. You know, they would grow their own corn. And so it was seeing how they would store it, how they were, de-kernel?
Yeah.
De-kernel it and then get it to the pot and then cook it. Like, it was all of that, you know. Y de chiquita was, you don't really know, you don't really care, you know. You're like, all right, whatever, you know.
No. It's but like when they would ask me to chase a chicken for mole. It's like, I get to chase a chicken? All right.
You're like, yeah, I'm down. Up for the mission. Would you catch him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. Show the chicken. Was
somebody would get tired first.
So yeah, definitely. It was a lovely experience. And then also, too, though, when we were... we would go for the summers from like elementary up to high school. And then when I go to high school, you know, I went to Garfield High and it was a track system.
Yeah. So what track were you?
I was track B.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was track B. So it was different from like the regular school year. And yeah. So then I got to go to Michoacán. Or back to Mexico in different parts of the year that I had never gone before.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with those old track systems, track B was the one that was out most of the time.
It was the same, bro.
No, was it? I don't know. I mean, I remember either being in A or C track, and those were the ones where it was like more like a quote unquote normal school year, right?
Yeah. It was the same amount of time, but it was just weird times where we would like go on break. So I remember springtime, we'd go on break, and then like during the fall.
Yeah.
And so then I was able to see things and eat foods that were in season at that time, that during summer I would have never have, like, experienced. So it was just all around. And I still keep going when I can.
Nice. This is great. You're still able to keep that connection. Mm-hmm. When your parents decided to come over, was it like, oh, I hear everybody's over in East Lowe's? Was there family here?
My dad had a cousin.
Okay.
Yeah. And the thing is, my family, like, both on my mother and father's side, they were the only ones that migrated out here.
Oh.
Everybody else stayed.
They were like, all right, we're out here. We're like, we're going to go try something different.
Well, my dad, you know, he was migrating before he got married. And so, I mean, he was from a way smaller rancho. And, like, he knew that if he didn't come out here, his son or, you know, children would want to migrate. Mm. And so to try to, like, avoid that. Like, all the difficulties that go with that, he just was like, all right, let's just go.
Let's go move over there and start anew.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big decision. When did you start feeling more comfortable in terms of, like, you're from East Lowe's, you know, but you also have, like, the family connection? Or was that, or was just the norm for you? Because I know folks balance that out differently.
Like, what do you mean?
Like you know, de aquí, ni de aquí, ni de allá. Oh, the pushback that I hear from a lot of folks that when you go visit in the summer or on vacation, you're like, oh, here comes the pochos from, like, the city. Oh, sure.
I mean, my cousins were all really happy that we would go, you know, because when we would take a lot of our old clothes to get the hand-me-downs. But then, too, you know, we'd get the, like, the cracking jokes, the pocho, you know, like, speak English, you know, and that kind of stuff. But it was, let's see. There was some of that, but it wasn't that different because we're in East LA,
yeah,
you know, and it's a predominantly, like, Mexican, Latino community, right? And so it's like, well, I speak Spanish in East Los. Like, mm-hmm. I was in ESL till third grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, well, for me, what was most different was the place, like, from going from an urban area to a rural area.
To the rancho, to the ranch, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a lot of different amenities. Mm-hmm. So with going to Garfield, how was it with you going to school back then?
It was chill. I was a, you know, like a nerdy kid. You know, so my dad was very strict, you know, is very, like, I don't know if that's a reputation for Michoacanos, but definitely very strict. And then also, too, he was aware of our, you know, the neighborhood, right? Mm. So he didn't want us to be out in the streets or doing anything. He was just like, school, 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 school. So I literally could not go anywhere unless they took me, and they were always working. So, you know, I was just hit the books, like, well, that's what I do.
That's,
you know?
It.
So it was very, very nerdy in that way. But I was fortunate to go to Garfield because my brother was bused out to, like, the valley, San Fernando Valley. And I think, well, you know, he's a lot older than me. And so, you know, the 90s, he went to high school in the 90s and it was a lot hotter. You know,
he
was like, they weren't going to let him go to Garfield. You know, my dad, I guess, didn't want him, like, becoming a cholo or something, right?
I could see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was happy to go to Garfield because then I got to, you know, be with my friends, right?
Shorter commute.
Yeah, it was different adjusting to going to, like, a different, like, school system, like the
schedule, tracks, right? Yeah.
The tracks. But yeah, you know, I played soccer. I was in honors classes, so I did all that, you know. Did track and field, fucked around there a little bit.
How?
A scorekeeper.
How do you just, you're not taking it seriously?
Well, I mean, because I did play soccer.
Yeah.
And so during the off seasons, like, the coach would tell us, you guys got to do something.
Oh.
And, you know, when we're off season, track was on there, and I could not run for shit. Like, I could add stamina, but not fast. Like, I remember the first time they like made us compete and take a lap around, right?
Yeah.
I was the last one. I did not like that feeling. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna come out here and practice, but I'm going to be the scorekeeper. I'm not going to.
Yeah. You know your limits.
Yeah. And then also, too, I wanted to stay active in whatever I could because I knew, based on my brother going to college, he was the first one to go to college in the fam, that to look like a good candidate, you would have to have like all kinds of different things going on for you.
To complement, you know, being in honors program and like taking all these classes.
Yeah.
So where did you end up going to school?
Like college?
College, yeah.
Yeah, I went to UC Berkeley.
Wow.
Yeah.
Es un milagro that they let you go all the way up there.
Exactly, right? Okay, so originally my plan was to go to UCLA. You know, that's where I wanted to go. And so when you sign up, I think it was like 3 or 4. You got a waiver, like, right? You could apply like 2, 3, or 4 UCs, right? Yeah. And so my heart was set on UCLA, and they rejected me. I got declined, and I got accepted to Irvine, Santa Barbara, and then Berkeley. And I was going to go to Irvine because that's where my brother went. But then one of my homies, he's like, who also got in, he's like, yo, this is your chance to get out. You know, like, and it's a good school, so you should go. And I didn't know anything about yo que sé. So then when he told me that, I was like, yeah, you're right. I get to leave. and I left. And it was my first time when my parents took me and dropped me off. That was my first time there.
How did they drop you off? Driving?
Driving, yeah.
That's a road trip.
Porque ni creas que, like, you know, there's programs now where, you know, they take a group of students.
The bridge programs, all of that stuff.
And you could stay over and you kind of get to experience what it would be like to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm, my dad was not going to let me go with no stranger. So it was interesting too because Berkeley is like, you know, it's a hippie town, you know. So I remember first time walking down Telegraph, which is like one of the main streets there.
Yeah.
Like, we would see people with, like, tie-dye shirts. Like, oh, my dad was tripping balls. Like, he's like, this is where I'm going to drop, like, leave you.
It's really white, too. Yeah.
It's really white. Exactly, right? And so it was an interesting experience. But I'm glad I went because I was able to, you know, just, like, become an adult.
Yeah, do your thing. Between you applying and, like, all right, I can't go to UCLA and deciding I want to go to Berkeley. What was the conversation you had with them about that?
Well, they wanted me to go to ELAC. They're like, why you got to go so far? ELAC is right there.
College is college.
Right? To them, they didn't really like, get it.
Go to ELAC.
And then so I was like,
I went to ELAC, but not to make fun of it, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a big difference. Yeah. You know? And then I told them, well, yes, I could go to ELAC, but I got an opportunity to go be here. And so then it's a good school. And I kept telling them until finally they're like, all right, fine.
Yeah, because the point of going to ELAC is to get to transfer to a school like that. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I had to explain all that to them. And they were having a hard time. But ultimately, like, I think what did it for my dad was like, well, if that's what I've been pushing you to do, and then you're there, and then I don't let you, like, that's kind of fucked up, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that's it for him.
Wow. Yeah, it took convincing. But they you know, they're like, all right, we're going to support you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How was it, the transitioning? Did you do dormitory?
I did the dorms the first year, and it was hard. It was like culture clash. I hadn't left East LA ever, like, not even to other places around here in East LA, like other neighborhoods. Like, I think the only place I would go, we would go to South, like, LA, because my parents had some compadres there, but that was it. And, like, maybe La Puente, because my padrinos moved out there.
All right.
But that was it. You know, it was there, and then I knew Michoacan. You know, and I didn't get around, especially because it was just us. We didn't have tios or tias and things like that here.
Yeah.
Like, our circle was really, really small. Like, my bubble was tiny. And so, and then I went, I wasn't accepted to, like, the regular school the first year.
Okay.
It was like a, what was it called? I don't remember. But the thing is, like, I had to see proof that I could make it. And then the following year, they'd let me, like, not the following year, but the spring semester. I could go to regular school. I think it was an extension or something.
Wow, that's interesting. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, and so I think it was because I was, like, didn't have high SAT scores. That was, like, the thing. But, and so then the classrooms were smaller, right? And that was, for me, a trip. Because I was, for the first time, I was probably like one of two Latinos and Latinas there.
Oh, yeah. You know?
And then, although I was like a 4.2 GPA student, I no se comparaba. Like, these people were coming from wealthy places and, you know, they were just more advanced than I was.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, I felt, started feeling some sort of way.
That is so intimidating.
Yeah. And then two, what one thing that was big for me was the language. Like, here in East LA, it's Spanglish.
It's like, nah, fool, hey, you know.
Well, and then just Spanglish too, yeah. You know. It's like, I could be having a conversation with someone, and if I don't remember that word in English, then I'm like, Spanish, boom, you get me, right? Mm-hmm. And over there, I couldn't. And then so, like, me trababa, I'd get stuck, I'd be like, and then I start stuttering, and I got really, really self-conscious about that.
Oh, no, mm-hmm. Dang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and then two, the... What you said, the food stuff, is too. Like, I would say, like, nah, dick, like that, all kinds. And people would be like, did you just say dick? Like, what's going on with you? Like, oh, my God, I'm not at home.
You can't just turn that off. It's subconscious.
You couldn't. And then it took me a while. And then because I started seeing the reactions of people, they're like, all right, I got to chill out, you know?
Yeah.
So you do that.
Oh, man. I've always wondered how at that same age I would have been able to manage that transition. Because even now as an adult that's still, like, navigating these spaces and code switching, mm-hmm. It takes effort.
It really does. But I think what saved me was I was in a dorm where it was Chicano Latino.
Oh.
Yeah, for freshmen. And so that helped me a little bit more.
Was that intentional on your end? Like, oh, like, put me with, like, my other folks? Yeah. Or the school was deciding, well, let's just keep y'all together and, like, have a race war?
No, I was, it was my decision.
All right.
And I wanted to do that just because I knew that it would have just been so much harder for me.
I can't imagine, like, you know, you go to college and your roommate or your dorm mate is a Becky.
Exactly.
It's like, ugh, you put mayonnaise in your sandwich?
Thank God I didn't go through that. I've heard stories.
Yeah?
You know, and so I just, me salvé de esa.
Yeah, you know, you got, at that time you had your head on straight. Like, no, I need to stick with my folks and have at least some familiarity in this unfamiliar space. Mm-hmm. So dormitories, and then you did what?
I ended up going to the co-op.
Oh.
And so it's it was the co-op where all the students of color mostly lived.
Okay.
Right? Because it was apartment style co-op. So, you know, it was cheaper, right? And where compared to the other co-op system, like, or houses or places within the co-op system, mm-hmm. It's like big houses and, you know, just a bunch of white people.
Like a fraternity? Like a frat,
like,
sorority?
Like frat style, but it was mostly like those, like, you know, weird hippies.
Yeah.
White hippies, you know?
Interesting smells.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was just living with the people of color.
Yeah. Well, how was that? I mean, obviously, I can imagine a lot more fun, no?
Oh, yeah. We had some good parties, you know, some good times.
Yeah. Good times. Nice. And then, well, I mean, aside from the living situation, what was the school situation? What were you measuring in?
Measuring?
Majoring.
Oh, majoring.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I dabbled in a lot of different things. And I couldn't make up my mind. Mm. So there was this point where I find out that Berkeley lets you create your own major.
Oh.
The only condition is that you have to write a thesis. And then so then you're essentially, you choose your core classes. And then you write your thesis to, like, weave all your core classes together, right, on a particular topic that you choose. And so I went that route because I, you know, a lot of my, folk, like, the, my friends were taking, like, ethnic studies classes, you know, and I was interested in those things, but I also wanted to learn other stuff, right? And so I kind of had an inclination for health and, you know, sustainability and stuff like that. So I wanted to learn those things. So if I, I had the option, I'm like, well, let's take it. So
that's nice. What I did. And then after college, what did you end up doing after that?
I stayed out there for a little bit. Well, you know, during college, I took breaks. I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't do the 4 years.
Like, you know, straight, back to back.
Yeah, I took some, like, there was two times where I took a semester's off. I withdrew, I was stressed, you know.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, and so,
because, I mean, not to interrupt you, but you were also doing this on your own, right? Like, you were working and then going to school at the same time?
Well, yeah, I got financial aid.
Okay.
So, but I was working just because I remember my brother had, like, taken out all kinds of loans.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Because he didn't want to work. So I'm like, no, shit, I'm going to work. And, you know, I don't want to be in debt and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I had to work. And I tried staying out there, but it was too cold for me.
It is.
It's way too cold for me. Like, it could be looking stunning, and then you go outside and you're like, shit, I need a jacket.
Two jackets sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you need a real jacket. LA people in their jackets, they're not jackets.
That's me trying to go to New York in the winter with, like, my Dickies and a hoodie.
Oh, God. Yeah. I learned real quick about that one, too. That's something, too. That
yeah.
I
had to adjust to. Insulation, layering.
Layering. Layering's key. So, but then, you know, I just didn't, you know, find a job out there. And I also didn't want to stay up there. And so I just came back down. And, you know, I was out here and getting kind of reacquainted with folks and the community. Because I was out for like 5-6 years.
That's a good chunk of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, I just started looking for work. And I found a job out here. And it was doing with a nonprofit doing... nutrition education work.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect segue into my next question is with you and your relationship with food, because you already mentioned that a little bit with, you know, your experiences going back to your family's ranch in Michoacan and being, like, somewhat conscious of it, but not the way you are now. So how would you say your relationship with food has changed since then?
Well, you know, actually, leaving home, right, leaving East L.A. really, like, changed my relationship to food because I would miss home a lot.
You know, like home cooking?
Home cooking. And out there, I know initially you said, oh, there's a lot of Mexican places out here. There's, well, back then there wasn't many out there in the Bay Area or Berkeley. And the ones that were there, they were shitty. I get so upset. I'd be like, oh, my God, like, this isn't Mexican food. I'd be outraged.
You're like, who put sour cream on this?
Or just some random, like, el sazón. It was just,
yeah.
Like that American.
The fundamentals were missing.
Yeah, yeah, you know? And so that's when I really started kind of getting closer to the kitchen because I didn't grow up, like, saying, oh, I want to be a chef or anything like that, no.
Did your mom, like, show you things here and there?
She did, but sometimes we bicker in the kitchen and to the point where I was like, you know what? Whatever, I don't want
to
learn.
What would lead to the bickering? Like, them trying to teach you something and you not wanting to learn it, or...?
It was more like I would do it and, you know, it was like that process of picking something up new and I'd probably do it too slow or I'd do it some sort of way and then I'd get really defensive, right? And I did have some, like, there's some antagonism against, like, the kitchen space because of the expectation as a woman to be domesticated and, like, you know, cooking and doing all those, you know, things, right?
Yeah.
And also, too, like, I was just me and my brother, so I having to serve my brother when his grown ass could have served himself. You know, it was that
I
kind of stuff.
I am guilty of that male privilege served before my sisters.
So I was resistant. I was like, you know, and as a teenager, I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And it wasn't until I left home, and like I said, it's like, well, I got tired at some point of eating that crappy Mexican food. And so I remember calling my mom, be like, hey, so how to do this? I want to make some pozole.
That's the first thing I did. Damn. It's not even like, let me get some rice and beans going. It's like, let's get some pozole up in here.
You miss it. Like, you know, and I couldn't really come down too often because one, it was tiring. I had to do the Greyhound.
Which, oh, no. Yeah, Jesus.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. No set.
Even the mega bus, too.
I mean, there was no mega bus.
Not back then. No.
So I had no option. And so then I was like, all right, so I would call her up and, you know, typico, like I'm sure most, like a lot of, you know, people have the same experience. She'd be like, well, you know, she'd list the ingredients and then I'd ask her the amount, like the quantities. And she'd be like, well, hay tantele. I'm like, lady, I'm making a pot. Like, I don't know.
Isn't that been tripping me out so much is really coming to terms with that aspect of family cooking being shared and taught that, yeah, parents don't tell you, you know, 2 ounces, 5 milligrams, a tablespoon, a quarter, whatever. It's like, yeah, just fucking throw it all in there and figure it out to taste.
Well, but then they already are accustomed to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they más o menos ya saben, like they could eyeball it. Okay, it's going to be this amount of people. This is how much I need, right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't have that experience. And so, you know, I did it. I was like, all right, fuck it. You know, I went to the store, I did it. And then I shared with the homies, you know, and everybody was loving it.
Oh, shit.
We all missed it. Like home cooking, right?
It's like, hey, everybody's they're over here making pozole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So people would come through, you know, because, I mean, no vas a hacer poquito.
No. Right?
So I remember cooking for them. But one thing, too, that struck me, it was, that I use the pozole, the hominy, the can.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I tried it, estaba rico, you know, for the first time, right? Like my dad said, estaba comible, like, you know, you could eat it. But the hominy was like off. And I'm like, what is this? And it's because I grew up eating pozole que tenía hominy nixtamalizado.
Oh.
So my mom never used the canned stuff.
No.
And that's for the first time I realized. I'm like 18 years old. When my mom made pozole, she made it from scratch.
Yeah. Right?
And I was like, what?
Literally what a lot of folks really like kind of really romanticize a lot, that farm to table aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where like you, oh, this restaurant's farm to table? Yeah, it's going to be worth paying, you know, whatever they're going to charge.
Mm-hmm. But when it's like your mama was doing it or did it, you know?
Yeah, I the same value isn't put in that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Entonces, ¿cómo se llama? Entonces, es cuando, like, I realized, like, damn, my mom was going out of her way to do it. I don't know what her reasoning was, but I'm pretty sure it was because it tastes better,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I realized, oh, I'm so fortunate that my mom still did that, despite her, like, working and did that. Like, she still...
That effort to go, you know, keep doing that. And it's funny enough, I was just having this conversation, too, with Marisol, my girlfriend, that, you know what, fuck this. I'm tired of making the rice from scratch and, like, you know, making this tomato sauce from scratch and, you know, cooking the tomatoes and everything. I'm just going to go buy a can. And I was like, no, just keep doing it, even though, you know, it's a process. And obviously it tastes better than it would if I just opened up a can of tomato sauce and just mm-hmm. popped it in there.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that's something that happened. And then, too, while I was in, like, a public health class, I remember that we were reading this article. It was, like, the Latino paradox, where they were talking about how, well, it wasn't specific to Latinos, but like how most immigrants that come to the U.S. or migrants that come to the U.S., mm-hmm. They're going to be the healthiest of their descendants. So every generation after them, because of the assimilation and acculturation and adoption of like the Western American diet, like their health would decline because of that.
That's why like 10-year-olds are like 6 foot tall.
Right. And so when I saw that, I was like, shit, they're talking about me. Like, you know, I was like, oh my God, like, does this mean I'm going to be unhealthier than my parents? Right. And then that's when I made the commitment to try to continue eating like my parents, you know, and because this, we were reading this particular article because we were talking about diabetes and the, all the diet related illnesses affecting communities of color. Oh. Right. And so it's like, okay, so I made that commitment to myself, but then also I made, you know, I was like, well, I want to be part of the effort to like grow that awareness, you know, and like of the value of eating that stuff because,
yeah,
you know, like when we talk about ni soy ni de aquí ni de allá, right? Like that's also was reflected in my diet. You know, my mom would cook her beans from scratch and siempre había frijoles en la casa, right? Yeah. And things of those, the, you know, the calabacitas and those things that, you know, she ate back home. But we would also fuck with like the pizzas and the hamburgers.
La gigante. You know, or can't beat that price, a 30 like slice pizza for $10.
Well, we would go to our local pizzeria, which is UVU's. That was
back. Oh, wow. I never heard of them.
The street. It was just up the street down first. But anyways, we would go there and then two, I had a problem with at some point I had an anorexia. I wouldn't eat, right? Because I was all complejada, like, you know, this teenage girl trying to figure out how to look, right?
Yeah.
And the magazines were telling me, or the things that I was seeing and my expectations of what I had to look wasn't really the same. So then, you know, I struggled with that. So that was my relationship to food, right? But when, you know, I realized, oh, it's a difference. It's a matter of quality, things that you're eating, right? Yeah. And so, you know, I started then changing, like, okay, it's a conscious effort to know what you're eating, right? It's like no estar peleada con la comida. It's like you're not fighting with the food,
yeah.
But it's more like making the better choices.
Oh my God! Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, to kind of really come to that conclusion at a younger age than I think most of us do. Do you think that's where that put you on the track to do the work you're doing now?
Yeah. And then too, like I remember, I think maybe like in high school, you know, I was raised Catholic. So at some point I gave up meat for Lent.
Which just happened this Friday.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like about 40 days not eating meat, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was playing soccer and stuff like that. And so then when that time came to start eating meat again, I felt the changes. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't feel the same, you know? And so I think it was that experience too, those experiences, like, okay, you know, I like, let me make that decision right now, you know, as at a younger age. Right?
So yeah, with the pandemic and everything going on, you know, like I shared in the beginning that for me, it was like, oh, let me get some good food and support some local businesses at the same time. How has it been for you?
Well, initially, like for work, in terms of work, you know, I stopped cooking and, you know, everybody was home.
Yeah.
Right. So then I was like, well, people are cooking for themselves now. You know,
it was a combination of being at home and not knowing almost a year later, like what we know now of like how to be safe and how to do things, mm-hmm. and how to take precautions.
Yeah. So then I took a break and thinking that, yeah, people were cooking for themselves. And then in that time, you know, I really focused on my garden. you know, I got a stimulus check and I invested that in changing my parents' front yard.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Like a pimp, you know, little food garden. And so with the help of my partner. I had the space and the time to really kind of reconnect with the process of growing food, right? And it was great. It was great because I had time to do that stuff, you know, before that, you know, it's just like in chinga doing all kinds of stuff. And then you don't have time to like tend to your plants and like look at them and try to pick out the worms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was a good little break. Right. But then I started up again, like in August.
Summer. Like, okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, surprisingly, people were ordering, you know, and I think it's they were just getting tired. Igual como dices tú, you know. But you really, like, personally, in terms of the food, I had time to cook for myself, believe it or not. Like, something that happens with, like, cooks or chefs is that you're so busy cooking for other people and that you either forget to eat or you get, you're just so busy that you just can't eat, you know, because you have to produce this food, right? And so you got to get it out and you're just like eating like the trim of the carrots or whatever, you know,
tasting things here and there,
tasting things. Yeah. Y ya después de tanto eso, like, ya ni comes, you know. And so taking the break actually allowed me an opportunity to cook for myself.
Nice.
So that was good.
Nice. So one thing I do want to kind of like circle back a little bit to is what you mentioned already, is the relationship we have with the immediate food around us, which is in communities like East LA and Boyle Heights, it's a lot of fast food and it's a lot of industrialized food. Mm-hmm. For you, how is that relationship? Because, you know, you said you, when you were younger, you ate some of that stuff. But when did you like start making an effort to no more of that at all? Or like maybe once in a while, kind of like a thing here?
Well, I think for me, it was learning what was in that food, right? And what would it do to my health? And so I'm like super health conscious. So I, you know, when I learned that stuff, I'm like, oh no, I can't. Like, I can't do that to myself, you know? Because at the end of the day, I'm the one that's going to get fucked over.
Yeah.
But what also does help me, though, is that I like to cook now. You know, when I was young, I didn't, right? And then there was this moment where I was like, all right, I got to take it upon me to stay healthy. And so I started developing that love to be in the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
Pero pues sí, I know it was hard initially. You know, at some point I became vegan. And that was interesting, because like, no como carne. Okay, well, here's some pollo. Here's some chicken. I'm like, still meat. Nah. Yeah. You know, it was that kind of stuff. But yeah, so I think what that forced me to start cooking more for myself.
Right? Yeah.
And so, and in doing the work that I've been doing, like, I feel the hardest part for people is cooking for themselves. It's the time,
right? Yeah.
And so I think that's why I wanted to do something where I was cooking for people, because I know that it's sometimes you don't have the time, you know?
It's a barrier for a lot of us in non-pandemic times. Mm-hmm. But even in pandemic times, especially, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a bigger family, if you have kids around or you have other family members living in the home, there's a lot going on, so I can definitely see that. But one thing I do want to ask you about is how do you feel about seeing like a lot of the food that's going on now, which is like the Instagram food?
Ooh.
And by Instagram food, I mean food that is made to look what it means. It's meant to look photogenic. Mm-hmm. It's meant to look like if you see it on a social media post, you're like, oh my God, that looks good. And then you actually go get it yourself. And it's like, oh, this is blah, blah. Like, why would anybody combine these things? It's horrible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like the attention factor. Like, what could get more attention?
Yeah.
Just do some crazy ass shit.
Yeah.
And so we get more likes. Well, I don't know. What can I say? I mean, I'm not for it. You know, I mean, I've seen how people are like making it into like a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it's just like, ¿por qué no instead, why don't they like promote frijoles? Like, why don't they make like little pins, like the little pins? You know, people make concha pins and pancita pins. Just like, all right, why don't you make some pink pin or some nopal pin or like
bean
something
power
or some or like some corn thing or something? Yeah, pero salen con su pan dulce y todo
eso. Speaking to the guy who has a concha as a keychain,
you know, and I know it's like a cultural thing, right?
Yeah.
Pero, o sea, it's como, you know, there has to be a balance, you know. So if folks want to try that stuff, that's fine, that's cool, you know, I'm for it, but it's just the balance, you know, and sometimes people get stuck thinking that that's something that you could eat every day. And, I mean, you can, but then you're going to be paying for it.
Should you be eating that every day now?
No, you know, it's probably like once, you know, every 2 weeks maybe. I don't know.
Maybe even that.
It really just depends on, like, you know, what you're doing, how active you are. You know, like, personally, I'm not as physical as I would want to be. So I'm not going to be downing 5, 6, 7 tortillas or, like, you know, eating cookies and things like that. Because, you know, I have to be aware and conscious of that.
I am, like, on that edge of that line because I'm at the grocery. It's like, no, Eric, don't get cookies. Because you know you're just going to be eating them. And all you do is just sit on your ass all day in front of the computer. And then when you're not in front of the computer, you're sitting on the fucking couch. So it takes a genuine effort. But have you felt or have you considered, like, for your food, making it that kind of visual? Where, like, oh, like, let's try to make it Instagram, like, tasty.
Well, I've thought about it, but I'm... You know, a lot of what I do is just me. My mom helps me, you know, but it's just a lot of work, you know. And so it's like, you know, I can invest time in making something look pretty, but then it takes away from making the time it takes to make the food taste good.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, and sometimes I do struggle with like the cute artsy plating stuff because... I mean, yeah, that's fine and that's pretty and that's an artistic outlet or a creative outlet, but how much are you going to charge for that? And then can people, like, who's going to be able to buy that shit?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, so then I'm just being a servant to, like, these rich people? Nah. You know? So that's the way I see it. But, yeah, I would want to take more pictures of food, right, and my food specifically. But, you know, like I said, sometimes it's a matter of time, you know.
You're only one person.
Only one person, and I have a herniated disc in my back, you know. So after I'm cooking, I'm just like, I want to rest.
Yeah, you know? Lie down a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a lot of work. Cooking is a lot of work. It's a lot of work, so.
Well, one more thing on this. Have you seen those videos of, like, people making, like, all these junk foods?
Yeah, I have.
Like, what's usually your reaction?
I'm just, like...
Because I'm like, that... Why are you putting hot Cheetos in water and then putting them in mac and cheese? That is nasty, Karen. Why are you doing that? But then, at the same time, I also understand that I think a lot of people make these TikToks and these videos... Because it's going to get a reaction.
Yeah, it's content.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're like, all right, let's do it.
Pero some Latino on somewhere is going to be like, I'm going to go and, like, be really mad at this and tell everybody. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, it starts making the rounds. And it's kind of like this. You know, I'll be asking you, oh, did you see that one video where somebody's making pozole with ketchup?
No. Not even. you know, yeah, it's the same, like, shock factor for me. It's just like, what are they doing? Like, why? And, you know, como se llama? It's just like, it's this vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle.
And the thing is, too, though, what happens is, like, you know, people are inclined to try those foods, one, because they want to check it out, but then two, like, stress. People are stressed out, you know, during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Like our lifestyles change so much, right? And when you're stressed, you know, people stress eat, and that's a very real thing, you know. And based on what I've been learning, it's like, it's depending on the foods you eat, then you're creating that bacteria in your gut, right? And then your bacteria that, let's say bad bacteria from like processed foods and things like that, can then have an effect on your behavior. So, you know, sometimes it's the, maybe it could be the bacteria saying, give me more of that junk food so I could thrive.
And, oh my God.
And like make your body sick.
That's like right? When my mom used to tell me, like, you're just feeding that worm in your stomach.
It's like that worm, but it's true. It's so true because, like, you know, we have a lot more bacteria than we have like human cells.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of that is stored in our gut. And so the good bacteria is going to keep you in a, in a good mental, like, state of mind, right? And, but, like, all these, like, food colorings, processed food.
A lot of,
like,
fake food.
The fake food, that's going to create bad bacteria, and that's going to make you feel a certain way and behave a certain way. So it's, like, again, going back to that vicious cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's real. It's definitely a thing, like, stress eating. But, you know, at some point, you know, we have to, like, you know, just take agency back and be like, no, bacteria, you work for me.
Here's some kombucha to help you.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or some pulque, fuck it.
I mean, oh my God, I miss pulque. There were, I mean, not to blow up the spot, but over in the Piñata district in the Olympic, there was like a dude and a señora that would set up and they would just sell pulque by like the milk jugs.
Mm-hmm.
So good. And I had to make it a point to buy it and not drink it because it would just get me tipsy almost right away.
You're like, shit, I still had to work.
Yeah, I still got a whole day ahead of me. I can't just drink this pulque and then have to drive home, you know? But yeah, especially being a part of LA Taco, right? And being part of the food media industry, not that deeply involved, but still part of it, and seeing how a lot of the background stuff works of food and who's sharing it and, you know, telling people's stories, much like you and me are right now sharing your story on the podcast. At one point, you know, pre-pandemic, I was eating a lot of like that kind of food. Mm. And I was just like, oh my God, it's so delicious. But it's too much. Like, even me, I'm like, no. Like, no more tacos. Mm-hmm. No more, you know, corn with hot Cheetos on it. Or, like, mm-hmm. No more some food and then somebody put something extravagant on it. Like, I remember having an esquita once, you know, the corn cups with mayonnaise and cheese and chili pepper and lemon. And you have all of that. And that in itself is like a street vendor snack. And then you add bacon to it. I'm like, this is so good, but it's so not good for you. I'm just like,
so people can see what my reaction, but definitely rolled my eyes. That's usually my reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, no, dude, stop it. It's just like too much good stuff.
You know what, too? Like, a lot of that is like, what I have a problem with is that people create those combinations for the sake of making money.
Yeah, that's part
right?
of it, yeah.
It's like, okay, what's going to draw people more, like, right?
Bacon.
And it's not, like, not taking into account, like, their role in making people sick, right? And then there's this idea that, like, oh, wow, it's an individual choice to you know.
Yeah, you are deciding what you put in your body, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's really a systemic issue, you know? It's like, well, no, you know, our food system is designed so that, you know, we're eating shitty food, right? And that's the cheapest, that's the most accessible mm-hmm. in our communities of color, you know, and it's what's going to make money, right? And it's not like, oh, thinking about, you know, what healthy foods can I eat for people, right? And,
yeah.
And making them accessible in these communities, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, where we live, it looks like the Little Caesar, you know, around the corner that sells you a large pizza for $5,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? And then you get the Little Caesar's $5 pizza, and then you go to the Food for Less, and you get 10 Gatorades for $10.
Mm-hmm.
So it like, sometimes I'm just like, wow, I can't believe I used to eat like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though sometimes I still fall into those bad habits of like, I just need to eat some greasy pizza.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have those moments too where I fall off the wagon. Just like, shit, man. But now I've gotten to the point, I think, like, aging will set you straight at some point. Mm-hmm. Because I got into the point where, like, I can't eat certain foods anymore because then I'll pay for it, like, real bad.
Dairy?
Well, dairy, tequila, mezcal, tequila? Café, chile.
Oh, wow. Man,
yeah, yeah. That's me now. That's me. I'm about to turn 35, and I can't eat those foods in excess anymore because then I'm just like, my stomach is burning. And I think it's because I overdid it. Yeah. I
worry about that a lot. I worry about that. But I call it my chile half-life. It's like, how long do I have left before my stomach gives out? It's like, nah, dude, no more sauces, no more hot sauce. I have, currently at home, I have 3 different types of hot sauces.
You know, it's just, I think what it's really an issue of maintaining balance.
Yeah.
And it's like when you let things get out of balance, it's like, you tip the scale. That's it. No return. So
yeah,
that's my consejo to you and to all the 30-year-old fools and fulias who are listening. Like, take it easy because you won't be able to eat it at all.
Yeah. I think that's the key. Moderation. Being really balanced about it. It's okay. Like one thing I do only do once a year, literally once a year, is a bacon wrap hot dog.
Okay.
And that's only like at the May Day protest. Because, you know, I'm usually out there for work or something. And I was like, oh, I'm here marching. I've been out here marching since like 9 a.m. Let me get a hot dog.
I earned it.
Fighting for justice builds up an appetite.
It does. It does. And you support local economy.
Yeah, right? You're supporting a vendor, you know. So I make a lot of reasons to justify it. Mm-hmm. But you graduated, you came back home, and you started doing nutrition work. How did that look?
So I was working for this affordable housing developer, and they had recently they got in a grant and implemented a wellness model for some of their sites. And so what it looked like, it was different things from gardening to having like social services programming, stuff like that, nutrition education, and then also having like a little farmers market on site.
And
so the developer offered that at like somewhere like in Echo Park, Pomona, and Highland Park. Those were the sites that we worked in. And so basically it was just engaging residents with like information, right? To try to get them to eat healthier, make healthier decisions. And then we also, each of the housing developments had like a community center. So that's where we would host cooking classes.
Oh my God. Is that where I went one time with Claudia to like one of your classes? Uh-huh.
You went to drop something up? Oh no, you went to participate.
Yeah.
Look at that. Full circle. And so, yeah, we would set up, you know, stations. People would, I would invite chefs, or I would do it myself and lead the class. And then we'd, you know, show people how to cook with more veggies and why it was better to cook with more veggies.
And you're bringing it to them because they live in the apartment complex. Yeah. They just got to come down to the community
room. Mm-hmm. And so, but one thing too that was kind of like a mission for us is try to get folks to eat like things that they weren't familiar with.
Okay.
So we did a little farmer's market, and farmer's market usually sell things that are in season, right? And so then some people just didn't know how to cook with some of the items, like beets, or there's just not like common ingredients or produce that people would eat. So it's just like trying to get them to eat more things that were in season because those were more affordable, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of that. And I was there for a good amount of time. I was about doing that stuff for 5 years.
That's a good chunk of time. Yeah.
Yeah. It got to a point where we were trying to push the model to other organizations within, you know, LA. And I got to do some like food demos or cooking demos out in the street. We're like in Compton or like offering samples.
Like at like at street festivals or things like that?
No, because our little market model, like a little market, like a little farmer's market, it wasn't like what we think of now. It was more like a table where we had organic produce.
Oh, wow. It's much smaller.
It's much smaller. And so we then, you know, push that model to try to take it to other communities, the organizations that service, you know, folks with like modest means. And yeah, we're just out there in the streets offering people samples, like, I don't remember, just random things, like things that were in season. I try to make them culturally relevant for folks. Yeah. And that's really where I started kind of developing my knack for cooking. Because I've always been interested in, like, the food justice stuff, you know. And one thing that I learned there is just, like, you know, eating in season is going to be the best, right? It's, like, going to be the freshest. It's gonna, like, a local source.
Yeah.
But then it's also going to be more affordable because there's not all that, like, the expenses of, you know, shipping from Chile or some shit like that, right?
Yeah.
Or overseas. And so... yeah, that's what we were doing. But then afterwards, you know, and then too, I had the opportunity to like really understand people in their struggle to try to eat healthier. It's not just like making that decision. It's just having the resources, but also having the time, you know, to do that. And so... But then after that, you know, I was tired of the nonprofit world.
Yeah, I feel you on that one.
Because, you know, it's just like everything depends on a grant. And part of me was like, damn, like, I don't want to live this life. You know, I'm just going to do something on my own. Right. And so that's kind of like how I started, you know, cooking for like on my own for other people.
Would it be safe to say when you were doing that work, you were at the front face of it, meeting a lot of people, you know, doing cooking demos. But it also sounds like you were also the person in the back, right? Coordinating a lot of things. Because all these ingredients to do a cook memo don't just buy themselves, right?
So it was a lot of that. Just running around, picking stuff up. And then also, you know, just being, like, I would go to the actual stores. Like, let's say one of the affordable housing developments was, like, in Echo Park. Well, I'd go to the... I'd check out the local markets around there and even, like, the corner stores to see what they had there so that I use those ingredients. And I wouldn't have to be like, oh, yeah, go to Whole Foods or go to, you know, Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's easy to do that. But, you know, if folks are living in affordable housing, like, do you really think they're going to, one, invest the money and time to go to a place?
Do they have the means to be able to you know, go over there?
So many different factors, right? And so it's like, all right, well, let's see what people have and, you know, let's work with that.
You know, I've been noticing a lot, now that you say it, I noticed that a lot in a lot of the cookbooks and websites and, you know, blogs that people have of like, I'm going to show you how to make this. And then I'm like, gee, I can't find that at Northgate or like, I can't find that at this other store. Like, where am I going to have to go to like find something? Well, number one, find something really, you know, out there that's different than what is available to me, like you were saying. But then two, am I going to get stuck with a bunch of it and not know how to do anything besides that one recipe with it? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. So that's why I was always really conscious of like, I was in charge of the recipes that we would promote. So, you know, if I'd find something that had like something crazy, difficult to find, then I'd make. I look for a substitute or just, yeah. just take it out. You know, so it was an interesting experience, but I, you know, it really helped me hone in on like my skills.
Okay. So then let's talk about your first experience with the meal prep service. How did you come to that? They're like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Well, like I said, I got tired and then really I got tired because I got laid off and.
Because there was no more grant money.
There was no more grant money. But just like the way it happened, like it was just so irresponsible. Like I remember asking my boss, I'm like, okay, so I'm about to sign a lease to my apartment.
Oh.
Living by myself for the first time. Like. Should I do that or not? Because am I still going to have a job? Yes or no? And she's like, no, you will be fine, right?
They lied to you.
And then 2 months later, we're getting a laid off notice. I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I asked you, you know, if you could have been honest and I could have avoided all that. Whatever. So then, you know, I'm like trying to figure out what to do. And actually, it happened just kind of organically. Like a friend of mine on Facebook was going to massage school. And she's like, I'm looking for someone to practice on, right? And I was like, oh, I love my massages. I'm down. And so then that's when I started telling her, like, oh, well, if you need someone long-term, like, I'm down to be your guinea pig, right? And then so we worked something out where, like, in exchange for massages, I would cook for her.
Oh.
Yeah, and so then I'm like, so what do you need? Like, what kind of support? She's like, well, lunch. Pack me lunch because... You know, I could take care of dinner, but it's like, it's that, like, you know, things when I'm at work or on the go that, you know, I don't have time for.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, all right, cool. So, yeah, I packed her different dishes and different meals, and that's just kind of how it started. And, you know, it just took off from there.
Nice. When did the idea of that being something formal and, like, I can turn this into my own business, like, click for you?
Well, it was really because I was unemployed, keeping it real, you know, and I figured, like, you know, también como, like, my friend, you know, I was working that very stressful nonprofit job on the go, running around, driving around, you know, and I sometimes, that was a reason why I wouldn't eat healthy, you know, and I would, like, slip up. And I fall off the wagon, and then I start eating shitty foods, you know. And so then I thought, well, if that was a problem for me, I'm sure it's a problem for a lot of people, you know. And, you know, like, I want to be that support, you know. And so maybe I'll find somebody that, like, will need something that'd be interested. And, yeah, it happened. I mean, at first it was word of mouth.
Yeah, that's how I, like, learned about it.
Yeah, it was a word of mouth, you know. I started with a little bit of clients and then just started growing from there, you know, and just organically. And, you know, I've been doing it for like 4 or 5 years now. Yeah. And so I made some moderations here and there, but really the whole premise is like cooking plant-based meals, right? One, because it's like in terms of like food safety, it's the easiest. Like when you're cooking with meat and cheese and dairy and all that,
yeah,
you have to think of, like, there's just a lot more precautions that you have to do. And not that I don't take precautions, but like that's just riskier foods.
It's like certain things have to be kept at a certain temperature.
Yeah,
can't be out in the table or out in the counter or whatever out too long. Because, I mean, that's one thing I'm like, shit, I just touched the chicken. I got to wash my hands.
Yeah, I just
touched the chicken again. I got to wash my hands. Cross-contamination.
Exactly.
Even though it's my house.
But still, you could get sick, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want that, right? And so, you know, one, that's the easier one. And then two, that's something I feel like we need in the community, more plant-based stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then, I haven't lost my train of thought. But... anyways, so, you know, I kind of designed it so that folks, kind of like the way I like to eat, you know, I don't like eating the same thing over and over.
No.
Like, for days and days. So that's how I, you know, I try to change it up. And, you know, I keep it seasonal. That's the main thing. Keep it seasonal. If jicama is in season, I'm going to figure out like 10 different ways to make that jicama so I can make it throughout the season.
Right? Nice.
So then I can keep it at a decent price.
Yeah. Because
that's also one thing, like, people tell me, oh, you should charge more, or you should take your business to West LA or other places like that. And I'm like, I can. But, you know, then things change, you know, and, like, it's going to feel different for me. And that's, I want to be someone's, like, maid.
Yeah. Well, I get that they're saying that because they love your food. Mm-hmm. They want you to keep doing it, and they want you... to reach out to more people. But yeah, as you know yourself said, it's a very intimate, small operation. And even when, you know, we were talking before we started recording, like, I come to learn that you only do it every other week.
Well, at some points I do it weekly, like when there's the holidays, you know, because during the holidays I don't cook for people, like, unless it's like special orders. But yeah, I do it bi-weekly just because one, two, I don't know if my clients can all afford to get meal preps for every week of the month, like, you know, and so it's kind of like when we were talking about moderation and balance, like, you know, everything's like that in life, right?
Yeah.
And so that, and then two, and I'm sure there are some people that could do it like every week. But then, you know, the number decreases. Y para que rinda, like, para que coste, you know? Like,
yeah, that, to so get that, even.
Yeah, for me to, you know, actually make some, like, it has to be a certain number, right? And so, yeah, that's
okay.
That's my train of thought again. Sorry. It's great. Creo que me está dando hambre. I'm getting hungry.
A lot of talking gets you hungry. So, like, one thing I did want to share was when you were doing that first iteration of your service, I don't think I've told anybody this story to, like, one person. But when I was eating your food, it was really good. And it was also with the intention, it's like, oh, cool, I get to support you. You know, I get to eat some healthy food, and, like, I have food for, like, a day or two, because, like, you will drop it off on Sunday. Well, I'll go pick it up on Sunday. And that same day, I would eat one of the meals because, like, ooh, I'm hungry, you know. But there was one week where it was a Friday, and I was like, oh, my worm's itching, right? I'm really craving some KFC. And that was, like, after 2 weeks of eating your food. So I go eat the KFC, and my palate is just shocked. I was like, whoa, I never in my life was it so explicitly salty that I was like, oh, my God, like, I can't eat this. Like, it's just too much. It was just, like, overpowering. And I was like, I've never had this happen to me. I kind of freaked out for a little bit because I was like, what the fuck is going on?
What did I do?
Yeah. I went from one extreme to the other. Like, I was just like, I'm hungry. I've been eating vegan meals, like, all week. I want some fried chicken. And I'm like, nope. to this day, I haven't eaten KFC.
What? That's a trip.
But I do. I mean, I'll get Popeyes once in a while.
Oh, okay. It happens.
Or like a chicken sandwich or something. Uh-huh. But yeah, oh my God, it was such a shock.
Well, you know, a lot of people that do order from me, like, they're not vegans, right? But I think they like that feeling, you know? And then two, a lot of people tell me that it does make the difference for them.
Yeah.
You know?
And you feel better.
Yeah. So it's like, again, like that connection of like what you eat with your mental like state, like it's definitely like linked and connected.
Oh yeah. So with you doing that, you at one point stopped and you took a break. What led you to make that decision?
What was the pandemic?
It was it?
Yeah.
You were doing it that long? The meal service?
Yeah, I've been doing it.
Oh,
I've
wow.
been doing it. Ongoing. But before the pandemic, I was doing the meal service and catering.
Oh.
And so I was catering, you know, different nonprofit
functions,
events.
Yeah. Functions,
mostly that. And then, like, private stuff, too, like friends and stuff like that.
I think you might have hired you for some stuff.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so I was always the kind of person, like, well, how much, like, I'll work with anyone. Like, how much you got? And, okay, we'll work the menu around, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to be, like, super fancy or anything. But it's going to be, you know, something simple but good, right? And so I miss those. Yeah, I miss that kind of stuff. But the meal service is something I've continued just because it's safer. And you know, people do need that level of support.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's no gathering, so.
Okay. Well, then with like, I guess the iteration now that you have and picking it up again in August of last year, You kind of put a name to it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yes. That was a change.
That was a change. Okay, so it took me a long time to figure out the name. Like, seriously. Like, I struggled so much. Just because, like, okay, so there's a lot of emphasis on, like, branding. You got to brand yourself, and you got to make yourself look a certain way, and this and this and that, right?
Be Instagrammable.
Instagrammable, right? And, like, I don't know. I there was some resistance for me, or that was making my process a lot more difficult. And so one thing I struggled too was trying to figure out how to combine all my interests from like seasonal foods, you know, to like, you know, ancestral foods.
Cause yeah.
You know, I'm also really big on preserving like those food way traditions or food ways. And it's like, how do I do it? You know? And then, you know, I was like, okay, well, I honestly don't remember how I came around the word, but I saw it. I think I was going through a dictionary because I think during the pandemic when I decided, okay, I'm going to start up again, like I thought I can't start up again without a name. Like, yeah, you know, puede que sea, it doesn't matter. Just choose a name. Yeah, you know, do it. Right. And so that's why I don't have tattoos, because I'm like, I can't decide, you know, yeah, what I'm going to want forever. And so anyways, so then I, you know, I saw the word Irecuaricua, right, which is a Purépecha word. It's an indigenous word, indigenous to Michoacán. And, you know, and it means way of life. Right. And so then when I saw that, I'm like, wow, yeah, like my that I think captures all my interests. Right. Like, if we're talking about ancestral foodways, it's very much connected to the seasons, yeah. You know, and, you know, just like from also planting too, like, how do I, merge my interest for like urban gardening? Right.
That you've been doing at your parents' house.
Yeah. And then I've just had interests for many years. And so I'm like, wow, my ancestors planted, you know? And so it's kind of like those fundamentals. Like, I feel that word captures the fundamentals of just all the different things that, you know, are of interest to me. And then, too, it's like a reminder to myself that, you know, I can't be slipping off the wagon because I'm working and I'm helping other people be healthy. And then I'm just like over here all desnutrida or whatever, you know, malnourished because I'm not eating right, you know, because I'm so busy caught up with work.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, okay, it's a way of life for me as well, you know, and, you know, hopefully eating healthy is a way of life for other people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome that you set those intentions. It's like, no, let's, you know, try to be true to who you are, where your family is from, where you're from. And put that forward in this, you know, new beginning, sort of you branding yourself, because I guess you had to, right? You feel you had to, the pressure's
well,
there.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are like, so what's your name? Do you have an Instagram? And I'm like, I don't have none of that stuff, you know? At some point, I didn't really feel the pressure because, everybody in business will tell you word of the mouth is the best referral you could get or type of, like, exposure.
Or vice versa, if your food isn't good or you make somebody say, like, yeah.
Right. And so I'm like, well, that's how I got customers, word of mouth, right? So it's like, well, you know, and if I try to do something crazy, like, I'm probably going to blow up and I'm not going to be able to do it myself, right? I don't know. But, it had to happen. And I'm glad it did because, you know, now I'm able to have a little bit more presence in social media, and that's helped. That's helped.
Yeah, there's an Instagram account just for that, and then you have your own personal one. Yeah.
Yes. And so now with the whole pandemic, I'm exploring, you know, what else I could do related to just cooking and the preservation of foodways and all that stuff. And thinking of doing like online classes and stuff like that. So
yeah. I mean, there's like, you know, a whole group of folks who have done that I can think of. That it's a process, right? You start at home, you build it up little by little, depending on the person. You know, there other folks have gone the route where, like, yeah, they've gone straight to like, let me make a cookbook, let me do TV shows and like all this other stuff and put it really out there. But you know, you are really centering yourself and like really being conscious of not getting too ahead of yourself, right? Yeah. And not putting yourself out there too much, because not because you don't want to and you don't want to succeed, is you're just one person. You know, you want to keep true to you, to what you're doing and what your work means to you, that it's not just like for fame or for notoriety or any of those things. It's like you really value this, and you're working in food justice and nutrition, and food education really speaks to that. So, you know, it's a matter of time, right? And I don't think you're in a hurry.
For sure. And then too, like, I have physical limitations as well. Yeah. You know, I'm not as young as I used to be. And like I said, I just found out I have a herniated disc. Like, I have really bad back pain sometimes, you know, and then to manage that, like, I have to invest so much time in self-care. you know? And so it's like, well, do I go down the route of, like, you know, getting, oh, like, having a lot of work and not having time to do that, and then I just crash and, you know, I end up, I don't have any get back surgery? No. You know, so then I also have to pace myself, too, you know? And then, like, people tell me, well, you know, you should find people to help you cook. And yes, you know, I do need to do that. Pero el sazón.
The seasoning.
That's hard to come by. You can't, like, to find someone that can cook, like, in the same way that you can.
That intuition.
Well, intuition, too, but, like, just I don't know. It's just the science, the chemistry of it, the alchemy of it. You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just I have trust issues. Trusting someone. Yeah,
it sounds like you kind of like, you know, sound like your mom a little bit.
I do. Yeah. Right. Oh shit.
You didn't cut that squash right. It's not perpendicular.
No. She didn't have patience for me. That's what that was. But she was stressed out. Poor woman. Pero sí, what were we talking about?
That you want to get help, but it's very. I don't know. I don't think you're ready to give that trust yet.
Yes, the trust issue. Yeah, so it's just that, you know, I really, you know, take it real serious that people trust me to cook them good food, mm-hmm. you know? And so, you know, I have to find the right people and, you know, it's just a matter of time, right? And so I'm hoping, you know, to expand and see where that leads, but I'm not going to expand at the cost of, you know, burning myself out or burning myself to the ground.
As you shouldn't.
No.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm exploring other non-cooking things. Like actually cooking for people, so I could probably show people how to do things and stuff like that. But honestly, like this virtual world is a trip.
Yeah.
And so I'm having a little issues with that too.
I mean, as much as we are connected even more, we're just as much disconnected mm-hmm. from each other.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I have to be at this meeting and I have to turn my camera on. I'm very much zoomed out at this point.
Yeah, I'm fortunate that I don't have to worry too much about that. But, you know, I am like looking into, you know, how I could offer some things and services online. And, oh, man, it's a whole production.
It is. Know? Yeah. You're worried about the food, and now if you want to get into that, you got to worry about a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, like equipment, things like that, and, you know, I need to stretch, like, you know, I need stretch breaks throughout the day.
Yeah.
I guess if I manage my time a little bit better, but, you know, I do have a garden, I do grow my own food, you know, so I have to balance that out too.
You know?
And I tried to, my goal would be, I mean, to have my own farm and like use the food that I'm growing to cook, you know, for folks.
Yeah.
Not for that. And so it's just, it's, you know, it's like nature. It takes time.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's something I do want to ask about, because one of the things you do for yourself, you know, part of taking care of yourself is the farm thing that you do at your parents' house. But then you're also part of La Cosecha Colectiva, the collective gathering or collective harvest.
The collective harvest,
which is part of Eastside Communities for Environmental Justice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I've been a member since like 2019. And I mean, they're so great. Like, they, through this collective, they helped me like make my dream come true of churning the front yard. It was like some nasty ass shrubs that were there and just dirt. It wasn't even zacate. It wasn't even a lawn. It was just like little patches of like that ghetto grass. I don't know what you call it.
That's a good way to describe it.
And so it's just like, and I always wanted to do it, but you know, I didn't like by myself, you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
And you know, it was hard. And so when I joined them, you know, it's basically like this collective of folks within the East LA, Southeast LA area who grow food, right? Because we all come from, or a lot of us come from, like, you know, places and traditions that have that knowledge and mm-hmm. grow our own food. And so, you know, we would get together and do garden builds. And so they came over to help me to, you know, turn the front yard into a garden, right? And for the first time, I was able to make that happen. I was growing milpa, like corn,
wow.
in the front yard. And so many beautiful things have happened from that. And so we then have just started developing those relationships among us to help each other, to share resources with each other. Like yesterday, I went to go pick up some mulch.
Nice.
For my garden, free, you know. And sometimes those things are hard because, you know, it's just a quantity. It's like big quantities you're talking about. So if you have a network of people, then you're able to spread it, you know.
Yeah, you spread the wealth.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's just, they make your dreams come true, man. They really do.
Dreams.
Yeah, my garden dreams. Like, they made it happen. And they hooked me up with some seeds. And they hooked me up with a lot of different resources. And from there, it was like, oh, this is doable. I could do this, you know. And then the next year, which is like last year, I was able to upgrade, you know. And then, so it's great to have that support, you know. And then just know that you have other people like you trying to keep up those traditions.
Yeah, you know? It makes a big difference when you have a support network.
Definitely. And, you know, so, you know, I'm just so grateful to them because, yeah, we were just able. And it looks so pretty. And so many magical things have come from that. And then to my parents with the pandemic, they retired. So they're able to, you know, just like enjoy the garden, right? Because he grew up in that you know, environment. And so it's just nice to see them too, like when we talk about intergenerational trauma, like my dad had this, like, I remember growing corn once, and he's like, why are you growing corn? Like, you know, and then he started talking about how hard it was for him. Like, they would grow corn and no se vendía, like, it wouldn't sell. Oh. They would, like, have to sell it for really cheap. And like, I could see how demoralized he felt.
Devalued, yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, being able to plant corn now at the house, like, you know, I see him tend to it. And, you know, I remember recently he did something like I don't know the term. But he's like, he did it, you know, he gathered more dirt towards the root, the base of the corn,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and just did that all along the rows. And he's like, he stood back, he's like, mira que bonito se ve la milpita. You know, and I'm like, wow, that's a big difference.
That's like a movie moment right
it
there.
It was. And like, to me, it was great because I remember telling him, like, yes, you know, our ancestors just corn and this is what we've been doing for years. And he's like, you know, I'm tired of that. Like, you know, it wasn't a good experience for him,
yeah.
right? And so, like, now it came full circle. And so then, like, he's able to enjoy it now and him, like, just be able to share that with me.
You know? That is so awesome. They've been able to reconnect to that in such a positive way.
Yes, yeah.
Because I know I'm guilty of making fun of it in a way because, you know, folks our age, folks in our group that have, I guess, have an understanding and want to make that connection to their roots and that way of life that our parents had at one point. But I think so many of us do it that I think for me, that's why I make fun of it, that it got to a level where, like, oh, so many people that I know are doing that. It just kind of like, you have to have a little sense of humor about it, you know? That's why I'm just like, dang, not everybody's, like, you know, out here being a plant dad or a plant mom or growing, you know, their food over here. You know, some of us just over here chilling, watching
eating
TV.
Food.
Yeah. Getting, like, shocked by eating so much, like, KFC and sodium at one chicken bite.
But you know what? It's great that you had that experience because then you could, like, in the same way that I experience, like, not eating meat for a while and then going back to that. Like, you have that reference. And some people, that's all they eat, and then they don't have that reference, right?
No.
And so it's I mean, that's why it's good to, like...
Yeah, yeah. This is definitely, like, if you, as you've shared, this pandemic, I'm just, like, been chilling a lot at home. And I've been able to reconnect with food in a different way, especially remaking a lot of the foods that my mom made growing up and kind of really realizing, wow, I can do this, right? Mm. And in the process of getting the hang of that, realizing, oh, like, if I just did one thing differently, that would make this from being, you know, like, the way I've always had it, with maybe, like, chicken broth or, like, with meat, to making something that's, like, vegetarian or vegan by using vegan broth. I mean, not vegan broth. Vegetable broth. Yeah. Or other kinds of vegetables, like mushrooms and things like that, and peppers, as opposed to, like, a chicken breast or steak and things like that. So I'm, like, people see that on Instagram. I've been cooking a lot and baking a lot.
Okay. Look yeah. at you. Nailed it? All right.
I'm comfortable. I mean, I eat it.
Yo, baking is a whole different part,
it's
man.
It's a science. Yeah, it's like, so much science-based to it.
I'm not really into it because, like with cooking, you know, you could adjust as it's going. Yeah. But with baking, that's it. Like, once you put it in the oven... Either you did a good job or you don't.
Or you did. I'm going to eat these soggy donuts.
Wow. That's... Wow. No.
I think that's been my issue, is that I'll look up recipes, aside from the soggy donuts, I'll look up the recipes, and bro, I'm not going to be able to eat all of this. Like, no. You know, I need to learn how to portion it down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. And keep it to, like, within... 2 to 3, 4 servings, because there's only 2 of us in the house. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I was comfortable, like, making something of that, like, the recipe would say you'll get, you know, X amount of servings or whatever, and I'll Ziploc it and give it to folks. But, yeah, since the summer, I was like, maybe not. I shouldn't be giving people food, you know, just to be on the safe side.
You're like, I need to, it's also money, right? So your budget.
Yeah, it's also that. I'm the one paying for all the ingredients.
Right, so.
It's not like, hey, here's some brownies. Give me $10.
Exactly. Or you should just put your puesto, fuck it. Like a little side hustle. It's
as soon as I made the donuts, everybody's like, so what? Was you going to like start up your own pop-up now? It's like, no, I'm very much the same way like you. You know, I don't feel comfortable. Like, and taking it to that next level, because I'm still figuring things out. I still want to see where I make my little niche in all of this. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of fun. After, like, a day of Zooming and being in front of the computer, it's a nice distraction for, like, a few hours to, like, all right, let me get everything together. You know, let me put my steps together, get what I need, and then the actual process of doing it. And then, like, ooh, I finished.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then I think too, what I really enjoy about cooking is like it's so fulfilling, you know.
Yeah.
Because you invest so much of the time in the prep and you know gathering ingredients, and then after it's done, you could eat it and enjoy it, and you're like, okay, that was my reward.
Yeah.
Right? Versus like you know, I remember when I was at Berkeley, like a lot of people talked about going doing masters and becoming scholars essentially, right, for a living. And I couldn't get behind that. I'm like, okay, I'm sitting behind this desk and typing away or reading away. Like, what's the end result after all of this? You know, like, it wasn't, like, something that was tangible for me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I'm going to just stick to the cooking where it's going to be good. People are going to like it. And, you know, yeah. So it's definitely that fulfillment piece. That's right. And then it's a different when you do it from scratch. You know, you're growing your own food. Yeah. You know, so.
Well, sure. With that being said, we're getting toward the end of the episode now. So, with your meal prep service, how can folks learn more about it? How can they get connected? How can they order from you if they're interested?
Okay, so folks could check me out over in Instagram. Yeah, Instagram and Facebook. Mostly Instagram. So my handle is Irecuaricua. It's a handful.
Or it's I'll have it written and link in the episode description. Yeah.
All right. So it's at Ile Cuaricua, and I usually post the menus there. You know, I post it on Wednesdays or Thursdays. I give people a deadline because I need to know how much I'm going to be, like, use, like,
of course, much
produce of everything, and then go shopping, and I cook. And then the meals are ready on Mondays, so folks can have the option of picking up. I'm in East LA by El Mercadito area. And or I could deliver, and you know, of course, there's delivery fees. So yeah, it's the best bet is Instagram.
Nice, and the same if they wanted to reach out. I think, are you still doing some of the other work you were doing, like consulting, catering? Yeah. I know you're not doing it, but like if somebody like wanted to reach out.
Oh yeah, for sure. I, for instance, one of my customers, he's like, "Hey, that potato salad or that cucumber salad was bomb. Like, teach me how to do that. Like, I'll pay." Just do because he knew that I did cooking demonstrations, so I was like, "All right, you want that? All right, cool. You know, I'll do that." I've done consulting too for some like local organizations to have like food vendors develop like more plant based or develop a plant based like entree for their menu, just hit me up. If you need help with food or anything, hit me up, and, you know, I'll consider it, or, you know, something I'm down to do.
So one thing to know about the Marilena's food is, I think that's what I love most about it, aside from it being delicious and good for you, and you feel good that you're eating healthy, is that you are not doing what I see a lot of other people doing, which is, let me make vegetarian carnitas. Let me make a vegetarian or a vegan version of a popular Mexican dish, right? You I think for the better part, you're creating your own recipes, right? You're like original recipes. We're working with what you have, with what's in season, with, you know, what folks have told you was good or wasn't good in the past, right? So very much a flavor of your own. Not like I'm just going to try to make a vegan version of KFC.
Well, yeah. Well, so it's interesting because like I try to keep it affordable. So there's only certain things I could do, you know. And so that really limits what I can and cannot do. I do try to do Mexican, but it's not just specifically Mexican because I myself get tired of eating just Mexican, right? And so, you know, that's why I like to do other things like Thai food. You know, I'll try to do some Asian dishes, like as best as I can with my Mexican sazon, you know. I'll try to do, you know, just some veggie stuff here and there. It's really informed by the seasons and what's available, you know, and seeing how I could. And if it stores well, too. Because, for instance, I would love to, like, offer enchiladas and things like that. Pero enchiladas don't really, store well unless you, like, use a lot of cheese. Because it's that cheese, it's that fat that keeps the
tortilla
from going stale or, like, stiff, you know. So then if you don't have that, then you have to kind of think of different ways to certain dishes and stuff like that. But on the carnitas tip, you know, Michoacanos are known for their carnitas. Yeah. So if I do something like that and then my family knows that I'm calling it carnitas, like, I don't know, or some other Michoacano is like, this is not carnitas, bro. So, you know, so I don't even try it. But I mean, I'll just try some things here and there, but
yeah. 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 It's not the, that's one other thing too. You know, you don't resort to the de facto, like, let's make everything jackfruit.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And then, too, just because it's canned, it's like, it's preserved as well. You know, we have to transport it from God knows where. You know, it's like it's really popular, like, in Asian, Asian countries. And so, or cuisine. And, you know, it's not really sustainable, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to take that in mind, too.
Yeah, for sure. So, for everybody who's been listening to this episode up until this point, we have a surprise for you. So,
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So, we talked about this already before we started recording. So, the deal is, I'm going to pay for 1 week of the service. And the way it's going to work is, whoever comments on the Instagram post where Marlene reshares my original post on their Instagram account. First you have to follow their account, right? So you follow their account, and whoever comments first, what would be like the word, like the magic word?
Wasn't it orale? Orale was? Yeah. They're like, orale. I don't know.
No, that works. So, yeah, you follow their account. Then when they repost this episode, the first person to type orale will be the one that gets it. Because, mm-hmm. I thought about doing a raffle, but then that takes work.
Yes. And then I'm down with that. But then, too, I think I want to explain what...
Yes, please.
People are going to, like, what to expect.
Yeah.
So... An order includes three meals, and every meal includes a main dish and a side dish. And so I store them in containers. You pick them up or get them delivered, put them in the fridge, and then I label them in a way so you know what goes with what, and then you... reheat it if it needs to be reheated, or you eat it cold if you can't reheat it. Mm-hmm. Right, so just it's three meals.
Yeah, and the first person is to comment orale gets it.
All right, that's the deal.
And then basically after that, Marlene will reach out and y'all coordinate that. I'm just paying for the food. If you live far away and you want it delivered, you're that's on you.
Mm-hmm. But I do need to know by Saturday.
Yeah, so coordination is key. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So today is Sunday. This episode will be up the next day, which is a Monday. And I'll also post it on Instagram sometime in the morning, and I'll let you know so you can repost it, hopefully the same day. So that way, at least there's time for folks to coordinate.
Yeah.
And yeah, hopefully somebody who... I'm imagining the first person who listens to this all the way toward the end, they'll be like, all right, let me go put this alarm or something.
And then I post the menus on Thursday, so then whoever does get it can then check out the menu and see if they want to do it that week, right? Because sometimes, you know, some weeks are busier than others, and some people do need that support.
So, I mean, if anything, just make sure you follow their account. You comment orale, and after that, you know, if the week doesn't work for you or the menu doesn't sit well with you, just connect with Marlene. You know, let them know you're the one that won. And well, I mean, I'll also be checking too.
Yeah, because then all kinds of people will be like, "Hey, what's up with that?"
Eric said he got my meal.
Yeah. Eric said put it on the tab. I'm like, wait a minute.
So coordination will be key. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited because I was telling Marlene, the whole time I've done the show, I've never given away anything except my beautiful voice.
There you go.
But yeah, so we'll have the Instagram account linked in the episode description. You know, thank you, Marlene, again for giving me the time and for hanging out.
Thank you for thinking of me and inviting me and seeing me as, you know, like someone in the community worth interviewing.
Well, the fact that we just spent like an hour and everything you've shared, you know, goes to show you've been doing a lot of work. And like a lot of folks that I have on the show, mm-hmm. you know, you're in the community, you're doing what you do. And you're not necessarily worried about what other folks think about you or like notoriety or anything like that. You're just focused on doing your work. Mm-hmm. So there you have it, folks. This has been Audible Heights, and we'll catch you next time.
All right. Thank you. Bye.